Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Joy Lesnick, Acting Commissioner of the National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance within the U.S. Department of Education. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Kirsten Schroeder. So, Joy, I'd like to explore in more detail each of the core of the four products that you guys produce. And could you give us an understanding of the quick reviews that you issue, and what insights do they outline, and who's the target audience of the quick reviews?
Sure. So the review of an individual study, it's really a building block for the four main products you mentioned. We've actually reviewed almost 11,000 of them. Quick reviews are the clearinghouse's initial and immediate assessment of a single publication that is receiving significant media attention. And it basically answers the question, should we believe these findings? A little bit of a consumer protection rule. The review goes out in an email blast in about three paragraphs. It says what the study's about, what the authors found, and how does that study stack up against the What Works Clearinghouse's standards. We get this out within 8 to 10 days and then follow up with a more complete review in the form of a single study review, which is describes the findings more completely. Now, these are not all of our studies. We've not done 11,000 of these. These are just four studies that are receiving significant media mention.
So you mentioned this single study review. Can you go a little more into depth as to what the purpose of the single study review is? Can you tell us a little bit more about the contents of such review? How many of these reviews do you release annually?
Yeah, single study reviews, they assess the quality of one individual study that's of interest to the education community. It's not all of the research on that topic, but again, just one study. And the review results in a listing in our online database about the study rating. And sometimes it also ends up in a report that's about 6 to 8 pages long of main text and contains the key study details. I'd say we do about 150 to 200 reviews of individual studies per year in this way and release about 50 reports. You can search our online database for all the studies that have been reviewed by the What Works Clearinghouse and the rating.
And what are the intervention reviews that you do?
Sure. Intervention reports are a summary of all of the possible single study reviews on an intervention, basically, which I've said we define as a program, policy, or practice. Intervention reports are the result of a systematic review of all the studies that have been conducted, whether it's 5 or 500, on a specific intervention, and then summarizes the findings from the studies that meet clearinghouse standards. So these reports are really the bread and butter of the What Works Clearinghouse. There are always multiple topic area teams reviewing studies for intervention reports, both creating new reports and updating existing reports to reflect the most current research. The intervention reports are a cumulative summary of all of the high-quality research on an intervention, and I really mean all of it. Whether it's published or not, peer-reviewed or not, or well-known or little-known, it's all in there. Even the studies that are not effectiveness studies are included. They're not rated, but they're included, so it's clear that we didn't miss any of the possible studies out there that might have been conducted on this intervention. Many of the interventions covered in our intervention reports are branded curricula produced by developers. When we start reviewing the studies for information, the clearinghouse will contact the developer and ask if they have any research on the intervention to make sure we have the comprehensive set of research on any given topic. It's a major undertaking that ultimately results in a summary report with usually fewer than 10 pages of main text. People are sometimes a little confused because an intervention report is one report and a single study review is one report. But an intervention report has reviewed all of the studies on an intervention and summarized the information, and the single study review has reviewed only one study and presented a summary. So it's a big difference.
Thank you. Let's continue on that thread. So single study reviews in depth on one particular study, intervention reports looking at numerous studies. Now let me ask you a little bit about practice guides. I see that also kind of used within NCEE. Can you talk a little bit about that? What types of questions do these practice guides tackle? How do these guides answer specific questions of practice? And also just to what extent do they offer evidence-based recommendations?
Practice guides summarize the evidence base and offer concrete suggestions for practitioners. We have close to 20 of these guides, and most of them focus on instructional topics. And they answer questions like, how do I teach fractions well? What can I do to reduce dropout in my high school? And how do I teach writing well? Practice guides are developed by a panel of about 6 to 8 experts who are either researchers or practitioners, and they work together to identify recommendations as well as the extent to which those recommendations are backed by evidence. They're really our most popular product. They're downloaded an average of about 20,000 times per month.
Wow. So actually, what are the 4 obstacles to use of the work that you folks do? And what are you doing to make your evidence or the work that you produce more understandable, more relevant, timely, and approachable?
Well, this really gets at knowledge utilization, which is why the Clearinghouse is well situated in the Knowledge Utilization Division of NCEE. It's a big and important topic because if nobody uses the information you have, then it's really not doing any good. IES has 2 research and development centers also looking at knowledge utilization, so it's a question we're thinking a lot about. When we think about how people use the Clearinghouse and why they might or might not use the information to inform decisions, I think about 4 obstacles. The first one's understanding, and by that I mean, is the information presented in a way that doesn't make anyone work too hard as a reader or a consumer of the information? Second, there's the issue of relevance, meaning, does this make sense for me in my context, and does the evidence add value to the decision that I need to make? Related to the issue of relevance is the obstacle of timing. So what I mean by that is, does the available information make sense for me right now? If I'm a decision maker, it's great that you have evidence about math curricula, but I need to improve adolescent literacy skills in my district, so the timing really matters. And finally, presentation. I care about evidence, maybe, but my brain's kind of tired. So if you're going to give me the information in a really dry way, that's going to be really hard to process. You get that glossy information from developers about their program, and it makes it look so easy and convincing. The rigorous evidence should also be convincing, and maybe even more so because it's independent and systematic nature of the work. So we try to address all of these in the What Works Clearinghouse. We try to group the information we have together by topics. You can address whatever topic you need with the evidence. So whatever topic you're addressing, you'll have information about that from the evidence. By providing a search tool for comparing interventions, that's called Find What Works. By presenting information in a variety of formats and not just print, we do use videos, social media, news flashes, and do presentations at key conferences. And then we also work with intermediaries to help extend the work of the What Works Clearinghouse. The Clearinghouse has to set our boundaries and simply provide high-quality information in accessible ways, because it's impossible to translate that information for every context that's out there. So intermediaries such as professional organizations, teacher and principal groups, the regional educational laboratories, and other federally and non-federally funded technical assistance centers really help to bridge the research into practice and support the use of evidence in education decision-making.
So, Joy, actually, as we were talking, I wanted to ask this question. You may have touched on it, but I'd like to ask it just in case you didn't, is if I'm a practitioner, the principal or what have you that you referred to earlier, does the What Works Clearinghouse or the Clearinghouse tell me which interventions are the most appropriate for my state or district? Does it help me with that?
So it does provide information for you to use as one piece of your decision making. You can compare those interventions if you have a couple that you're looking at. We do provide information about cost, information about support for implementation, but it's not going to tell you exactly what you should choose based on your context. You have all the information about the studies that have been conducted about those interventions, so you can see which ones match your context the most. In the Find What Works tool, you could filter that information by grade, by demographics, by geography to see if there's been a study that's been close that is in a school district or state that's kind of like your own to see if that helps you make the decision. It's a tool and one piece of the decision-making process. It doesn't tell you which you should do, and it's also limited by the number of studies that already exist. So we don't evaluate programs, we don't conduct new research. The What Works Clearinghouse only studies the existing studies. So you have to take that as one piece of your decision-making factors when going ahead and making a decision for your context in your school or your district.
And just as a follow-on, because throughout the conversation, quality seems to be an underlying mission of the work that you do, finding quality. Why does quality matter in education research?
Yeah, well, I think quality matters in everything, right? I think in this case, we're really talking about the quality of effectiveness studies. So effectiveness studies are really just a small piece of the pie. And the kind of research you design really should match the question that you have. If your question is, how did a program get implemented in a district, you're not going to do an effectiveness study, and it would not be appropriate to do so. You want to know more about how it was implemented along the way. So it's a different kind of design. So if we're trying to answer a question about what works and make this causal inference, we're talking about the quality of the effectiveness studies. And that's the kind of quality that we're talking about here. So you wouldn't want to make a decision based on faulty information. And if your groups were, if you have two groups, but one is already higher performing at the beginning and then they're higher performing at the end, it's not a good conclusion to say that the intervention caused that change. This is all about that causal inference. So that's what I mean when I talk about quality of the effectiveness studies and just the small piece of the pie. We also think that other kinds of research are important for answering other kinds of questions. This is just the effectiveness studies for answering what works.
What does the future hold for the use of evidence-based evaluations within the NCEE? We will ask Joy Lesnick, Acting Commissioner of the National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance within the U.S. Department of Education, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.